This is Side 2. Coming up.
Sir Ken Dodd. Tributes paid to one of comedy's all-time greats. This article is unattributed.
Long Ha on cheating the Creative Scotland acts and producing Chekhov's Three Sisters. An article by Neil Cooper, Theatre.
Eddie Redmayne. Professor Hawking, the funniest man I ever met. Livingston 1, Morton 1.
Island 28, Scotland 8. Foundations in place, time to start building.
Dunfermline 1, Inverness Caledonian Thistle 0.
Rogers in 7th heaven after Ibrox win.
TV dragon Bannatyne sees profits rise at Gym Group. This article by Scott Wright.
John Menzies puts newspaper distribution division up for sale.
Scottish economy slides on manufacturing woes as exports fall. Key Bank of Scotland PMI survey reveals. This article by Ian McConnell. This article from the Herald on Monday the 12th of March 2018. Arts. Sir Ken Dodd. Tributes paid to one of comedy's all-time greats. This article is unattributed. Sir Ken Dodd has been described as a legend and an inspiration as celebrities and fans shared fond memories of the popular comedian following his death at the age of 90. The comic, who died on Sunday just days after leaving hospital, was famous for his epic stand-up shows and his tickling stick, and he had a legion of loyal followers whom he continued to entertain even through his later years. As news of his death broke in the early hours of Monday morning, fellow comedians and television stars paid tribute to Sir Ken on social media. Comic Gary Delaney called him one of the all-time greats, and referencing the fact Sir Ken's shows could often last for hours on end, added, "The funeral will be held on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and most of Saturday." Television personality Claire Sweeney, a fellow Liverpudlian, shared some photos of the star's 90th birthday on Twitter. Alongside them, she wrote, "R.I.P. Sir Ken Dodd, a legend and an inspiration. I have a lot to thank you for. I was thrilled you had the best birthday party in Liverpool before you left us. Your city, friends, family and show business will miss you terribly." Paul Chan, known for playing Mr. Wu in comedy series Benidorm, wrote about a chance encounter his mother had with Sir Ken several decades ago. He said, "In the late 70s, he came to my mum's chippy and ordered fish and chips. He left and sat in his Rolls Royce parked outside eating them. Then he came back in to ask for the bin and drove off. My mum didn't know who he was. That's my Ken Dodd story." Other tributes came from actor John Challis, who played Boycie in comedy television series Only Fools and Horses, and Hollyoaks actor Annie Wallace, who described him as a true son of beautiful Liverpool. Irish comedian Dara O'Brien, known for hosting panel shows such as Mock the Week, remembered seeing him at one of his incredible five-hour shows. He said, "He was an education to watch, and afterwards, at 1:30 a.m, he had beers with me in the dressing room and talked showbiz. A privilege and a loss, R.I.P. Sir Ken died in Knotty Ash, Liverpool, at the same house in which he was born in 1927. Julian Richings, who has appeared in such films as X-Men The Last Stand, described him as a music hall great, entertainment legend, Liverpool pride, adding, "The lights are out in Knotty Ash." Fans also paid their own tributes, and many of Sir Ken's infamous jokes were shared on Twitter. One fan wrote, "Appropriate that this should be announced at about 1:15 a.m, as this is the sort of time his show's finished. What a legend. Happiness was your greatest gift to us." And another said, "Thank you for your amazing sense of humour and the laughs you left us with." This article is unattributed.
Long Ha on cheating the Creative Scotland acts and producing Chekhov's Three Sisters. An article by Neil Cooper, theatre critic, published in the Herald Scotland of Tuesday the 13th of March 2018. Mariah Oller was in the midst of rehearsals for her new production of Chekhov's Three Sisters when the news came through that Lung Ha, the learning disabled-based theatre company she has been artistic director of since 2009, had lost its main funding from Creative Scotland. Up until then, Lung Ha had been a regularly funded organisation, RFO, which gave the company 3 years' worth of security to plan ahead. For a company such as Lung Ha, such security was vital, as it was with all the theatre companies and arts organisations which had also had the rug pulled from under them. "The hardest part for me was telling the actors," says Oller. "We were in the middle of Three Sisters and they were working so hard, so to let them know that our work isn't considered to be worth regular funding was difficult." The response of Lung Ha's large ensemble, who had been working on the show for months, was telling. "They were active straight away," says Oller. "They pulled together and said, we're going to do the best show ever." Following a public outcry, Creative Scotland made a U-turn, reinstating Lung Ha's RFO status along with four other organisations that had been cut. "It was a very unsettling couple of weeks," says Oller. "There was no explanation why we had been cut, and then there was no explanation why we were reinstated. It was very strange. I've never known any experience like it." Forward planning matters for Lung Ha more than many theatre companies, and operating on an ad hoc basis and applying for funding project to project isn't really an option. "Because we need to work and rehearse so far in advance, we can't let a cast know that we may do a show in 6 months' time, but we may not. We would lose our actors. It's so unsettling for them not to know. They need a structure in order to be able to plan things with their support teams and their family support. Such uncertainty would threaten Lung Ha's very existence. I can't see how we could continue to be creative at that level," says Oller. "Lung Ha would go back to what it was before 2005, when it was a drama group. We had discussions with the Scottish Arts Council at the time and said that if we wanted to go further with the company, we needed to plan long term. They understood that. The old Scottish Arts Council seemed to understand as well just how unique Lung Ha are as a company. This isn't just in Scotland, but in Europe and Scandinavia, where they are regarded as pioneers. With this in mind, for Three Sisters, Lung Ha have teamed up with the Folk Music Department of the Sibelius Academy of the University of the Arts in Helsinki, Finland, to co-produce the show. As a Finn herself, Oller recognises some of the similarities between Russian and Finnish folk music and saw the opportunity for an artistic exchange. "There isn't a company like Lung Ha in Finland," she says, "and the people in the folk music department were really keen." To this end, Finnish composer and teacher Anna Karen Korhonen will perform a live score with three of her students. Instruments used will include a kantele, a traditional Finnish instrument which Oller likens to a form of table harp. Also on board will be Michael Seri, a young Scottish musician studying in Finland. "The musicians perform the music and play characters as well," says Oller about the extra musical dimension to the show. The play itself is seen in a new adaptation by Adrian Osmond, the Canadian-born Glasgow-based director and writer whose work has been seen all over the world. With much of his time of late spent directing opera in Korea, Three Sisters will be Osmond's first high-profile sighting on home turf since he and his Sweet Scar company presented a production of Sarah Kane's play 448 Psychosis at Cumbernauld Theatre. "It's always a joy to work with Lung Ha," says Osmond, who previously penned a version of Antigone for the company, as well as a new piece, The Hold, which was performed in the National Museum of Scotland. "When Maria asked me to do a new adaptation of Three Sisters for the company, I jumped at it. I've never had much of a chance to look at Chekhov, and my job here is to be as true to Chekhov as possible while trying to find the right language for the company. I think people can sometimes be a bit fearful of Chekhov because plays like Three Sisters don't have a conventional plot, and if you're not careful, you can find yourself swamped by samovars and dinner tables, and it can all be done quite straight-laced. Even reading it, you can get lost among all these characters. But when you put it on its feet, you can see the vibrancy of these people. At first, all these characters appear to be eccentric, but the closer you get to them, the more you realise they're just like us. Osmond could easily be talking about the members of the Longha Ensemble, who over the years have been asked to tackle other classic plays in an increasingly ambitious programme. Length is one of the key issues, says Osmond. So much of Three Sisters revolves around time, and you have to hone things down to the stuff that matters. One of the beautiful things about Longha doing it is that the company has this ensemble who've known each other for years, sometimes decades, and there are all these different personalities who know each other really well. To have that strong ensemble feeling, but with a set of complete individuals on stage, that's a gift. Osmond's first-hand observations sum up the power of Longha as a company. Fundamentally, for me, whenever I see a Longha show, I laugh and I cry at the same time, he says. Some of the most important things that happen on stage are things that the audience may not be aware of. The personal journey some of the individual performers are on in terms of connecting with each other means that there are huge leaps taking place. Even though the audience might not be aware of those individual stories, I hope they can still get the same energy. That's the same with my response to Chekhov. Three Sisters as a play is revolutionary. It's so funny, but it's also heartbreaking. We are doing it with less affectations than more traditionally played Chekhov sometimes has, and are trying to do something more disarming. These characters all feel they're profoundly irrelevant, but here we are a century on and they're still here, proving that they're still utterly relevant. As for the future of Longha, Oller seems to have absorbed the Chekhovian spirit of keeping on keeping on, no matter what life throws at you. We need to work, she says. Right now we're full on with this production, and once that's done we then sit down and talk about what we do next and see how we stay creative. Above all else, we work. Three Sisters, Traverse Theatre, Edinburgh, March the 15th to the 17th. Perth Theatre, March the 23rd to the 24th. Citizens Theatre, Glasgow, March the 28th.
The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 14th of March 2018, Arts and Entertainment section. Eddie Redmayne, Professor Hawking, the funniest man I ever met. This article, unattributed. Eddie Redmayne has led tributes to Professor Stephen Hawking following the physicist's death at 76, describing him as the funniest man he has ever met. The actor, who won an Oscar for his portrayal of Professor Hawking in 2014 film The Theory of Everything, said in a statement, "We have lost a truly beautiful mind, an astonishing scientist, and the funniest man I have ever had the pleasure to meet. My love and thoughts are with his extraordinary family." Prime Minister Theresa May was among others paying tribute to Professor Hawking. She said, "Professor Stephen Hawking was a brilliant and extraordinary mind, one of the great scientists of his generation. His courage, humour and determination to get the most from life was an inspiration. His legacy will not be forgotten." Scientist and broadcaster Professor Brian Cox told BBC Radio 4's Today programme that Professor Hawking was one of the greats. "There are many good theoretical physicists who make a big contribution, but there aren't that many greats," he added. "And by that I mean, I think there are physicists in 1,000 years' time. They will still be talking about Hawking radiation. They'll be using his fundamental results on black holes. Actually, the last time I saw him at his 75th birthday party, he was talking about the new gravitational wave experiment, where we've seen the collisions of black holes, and speculating that those results might be able to prove some of his theorems once and for all. plus his contributions to the physics of the very early universe. So there are at least three, possibly more, areas where his work will be remembered as long as there are cosmologists, and that's the best you can hope for as a scientist. Actress and neuroscientist Mayim Balik, who met and worked with Professor Hawking when he appeared on US sitcom The Big Bang Theory, tweeted, "As we near Pi Day 314, I join the global community in mourning the loss of the greatest physicist of our era." Along with a picture of Professor Hawking with the cast of the programme, she added, "Stephen Hawking is free from the physical constraints of this earthly condition we all exist in, and he is soaring above us now, marvelling at it all." The Big Bang Theory's Johnny Galecki wrote on Instagram, "Rest in peace, Stephen Hawking. Not only your brilliance, but your sense of humour will be sorely missed by all." Inventor of the World Wide Web, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, tweeted, "We have lost a colossal mind and a wonderful spirit. Rest in peace, Stephen Hawking." Physicist James Hartle, whose work with Professor Hawking led to the Hartle-Hawking model of the universe's origins, said his colleague had inspired a lot of people. Professor Hartle told Radio 4's Today, "What was unique about him was that he had a marvellous ability to see through all the clutter in physics and to see what the essential points are, and that, of course, was a great thing for going forward." He added, "My memory of him would be on several fronts. First, our work together as a scientist, and second, as a human being, whose whole story is of triumph over adversity and who inspired a lot of people, including me." Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, who was among the politicians sharing tributes, said Professor Hawking had changed the way we see the universe. European Council President Donald Tusk tweeted, "It matters if you just don't give up," remembering Stephen Hawking. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said Professor Hawking had made the world a better place and that his death was anguishing. "Professor Stephen Hawking was an outstanding scientist and academic. His grit and tenacity inspire people all over the world," a tweet on his page said. US astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson was one of the first to pay tribute to Professor Hawking. Sharing a photo of himself and Professor Hawking on Twitter, he said the scientist's death has left an intellectual vacuum in his wake. He added, "But it's not empty. Think of it as a kind of vacuum energy permeating the fabric of space-time that defies measure. Stephen Hawking, rest in peace, 1942 to 2018. NASA described Professor Hawking as an ambassador of science, adding in a tweet, "His theories unlocked a universe of possibilities that we and the world are exploring. May you keep flying like Superman in microgravity," as he said to astronauts on the International Space Station in 2014. Greenpeace USA thanked Professor Hawking for helping people understand their place in the universe and for leaving us in awe and wonder. This article was unattributed. The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 14th of March 2018. Sports section. Livingston 1, Morton 1. This article, by Alan Temple, originally published on Tuesday the 13th of March 2018. Livingston and Morton served up a breathless finale in West Lothian last night, but ultimately the real winners were in Paisley. The Ton looked to have snatched a laudable victory against the Lions, having taken full advantage of a second-half red card to Sean Byrne to claim a late lead through Gary Oliver. However, David Hopkins' side simply do not know when they are beaten, and the 10 men levelled thanks to a deflected drive by Jackson Longridge, extending their fine recent sequence to 7 games without defeat. Nevertheless, they are now 10 points adrift of St Mirren, and any hopes of a late title charge appear to have faded once and for all. Livy thought they had claimed the lead midway through the first half when a low shot from the edge of the box by Jordan Thompson forced a fine low save from Derek Gaston, only for Lee Miller to tap home the rebound. However, the celebrations were cut abruptly short by the flag of assistant referee Graham Leslie. Livy's hopes of making their pressure tell were scuppered when referee Greg Aitken dismissed Byrne for a second bookable offence in the space of 5 minutes, having tripped Gary Harkins. And the Ton took full advantage after 88 minutes, with Oliver reacting quickest to a loose ball inside the box and scrambling the ball beyond his former Hearts teammate Alexander from point-blank range. However, there was more late drama to come in injury time, when a speculative drive from substitute Longridge took a kind deflection and finally found a way past Gaston. This article was by Alan Temple.
The Herald, Monday, March the 12th. Sport, rugby. Ireland 28, Scotland 8. Foundations in place, time to start building. A report from Neil Cameron. 3 wins out of 5. That's 60%, which is a pass. There has been a drubbing of the English. Some excellent tries along the way. And it could be argued that in at least one away game, the performance was close to acceptable. Furthermore, Gregor Townsend's side have won back some affection from Lord and Lady Punter. That's not bad for Scotland's rugby team. Honest. Not after so many fallow years. Matt Scott, Alex Dunbar, Richie Gray, W.P. Nell, John Hardy, Ross Ford and Fraser Brown are among the many good players who have been completely or partly unavailable to Gregor Townsend for this Six Nations Championship. We are a small nation. Such losses are going to hurt. We should finish 3rd, 2nd if a million stars fall in line, and will surely be better for the experiences of this season when the team came from behind to dominate France in the second half, thrash England, hopefully go to town on Italy, and of course they lost on the road to the bigger teams. Scotland put together some superb moves at the weekend against Ireland, second in the world only to the All Blacks now, but couldn't finish them. They had a problem with passes to the right. 3 didn't go where they should have, and they were murdered in the breakdown. However, there is something to build on, indeed a lot to be encouraged by. Scotland have some world-class players. Finn Russell showed up well again, and while Stuart Hogg has had better days, he still made 16 carries and 120 metres. The pack is improving and will become stronger once some of the players mentioned before return. Stuart McInally at hooker may have gotten a few throws wrong on Saturday, but he has been a real find, while Sean Maitland has rediscovered his best form. Scotland lost, but they are far from defeated. The scoreboard doesn't really lie, admitted Townsend, who did appear genuinely upbeat to an extent after the defeat. Whether it's 20 points or 1 point, we lost the game. That's what we're upset about. But that was much more of a game. Sometimes you play badly and get away with a 2 or 3 point defeat. On Saturday we played well, but didn't take our opportunities, and it doesn't matter to us whether it's 1 point or 20 points. What matters to us is what is the performance and effort from the players, and to know there's enough in there to have made that game much closer. 3 clear-cut chances could be 21 points, and Ireland scoring off an intercept could be a different game. It wasn't, and that's down to us. But that performance was miles ahead of the one in Cardiff. Townsend and his players are getting bored talking about their wretched away form, almost as much as the Scotland supporters have grown weary watching a poor performance follow up a fine win at Murrayfield. Next year, Scotland are in London and Paris, where even great sides of the past have struggled. However, there are clear signs that an away win is coming closer, although at the same time there's a nagging doubt about it happening ever again. It might sound daft, but we lost 4 tries to 1, but that mentality, the way we defended, the detail in our game apart from the finishing, is what we need to do to win away from home, said Townsend. We caused a very good side a lot of problems, and we asked a lot of our players. From the performance, we delivered most of what we wanted from an away performance. We finished pretty well in the championship and in November, but we didn't do it in Dublin. Seeing what the players do in training, I'm sure that on another day they'd take these opportunities. I want to mention a couple of aspects. I thought our forward pack was outstanding. We respect the Irish forward pack a lot, and for us to do so well against them gives us lots of encouragement for the future. I thought Simon Bergan did well. We now have depth at tight head. and Blair Kinghorn on his debut was fantastic, playing Ireland away from home with their running threats and their intricate plays, also their kicking game. Blair looked confident, made a few breaks and did really well, so that was very pleasing. It would be remiss of Townsend not to put a positive spin on things, but it's hard not to agree with most of what he said. Yes, Scotland right now are at best a 3-wins-out-of-5 team. The head coach said as much himself on Saturday evening, but they are better than last year and the year before that. But in the name of Andy Irvine, this team do test the patience of their followers. You can look at the game two ways, said Townsend. We turned up, played well, caused our team lots of problems, put ourselves in position to win a game. Or we can go right, forget all that stuff. The team didn't put in any effort and we did finish off 2-on-1s. I'll watch the game 2 or 3 times in the next few days and I know which way I'll think about it in 3 or 4 views of it and it will be frustrating. But having seen bits of the game when we committed, when we caused Ireland problem, it's pleasing to know that this time we can take on the best and cause them problems. It is more frustrating for the guys. They're the ones who felt they let their team down by not finishing 2-on-1s. We are proud of how we played. We wanted a response away from home, and we got one in terms of performance. We didn't get it in terms of the result, and that's what we're here for. But that performance with finishing a bit better will be good enough to beat the best teams in the world.
Remember, you no longer need to receive a weekly digest service on tape, but can in fact listen to more daily content online via www.qandreview.com/freepodcasts, accessible on your computer or mobile device. The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 14th of March 2018. Sports section. Dunfermline 1, Inverness Caledonian Thistle 0. This article, by Darren Johnson, originally published on Tuesday the 13th of March 2018. James Cragan scored Dunfermline's first goal in 4 games, and the playmaker's free kick was enough to breathe fresh life into the PARS Championship playoff hopes following a 7-game winless run. The former Partick Thistle and Falkirk attacking midfielder curled a well-played set-piece around the wall and into the corner of the net after just 5 minutes. The victory moves the Fife outfit, who have a game in hand, within 4 points of fourth-placed Morton, whom they host on Saturday. The first half was an edgy affair among both teams, who were bereft of confidence following their respective barren spells. Cali's only victory from 5 matches prior to last night was the win that sealed the club's passage through to the Iron Brew Cup final. The second period lived up, with Cali forward Aaron Duran having a shot saved by Lee Robinson before Cragan had a first-time effort pushed behind by Mark Ridgers. The Inverness keeper did not cover himself in glory after twice misguiding crosses, but the former Hearts trainee pulled off an impressive save to keep out a ferocious Callum Higginbottom drive. The visitors' evening went from bad to worse in the dying stages when assistant manager Bryce Rice was dismissed from the dugout by referee Kevin Clancy. Dunfermline, Robinson, Williamson, Martin, Morris, Ashcroft, Cragan, Vincent, Higginbottom, McManus, Clark. Substitutes not used: Gill, Aird, Shields, Armstrong, Wedderburn, Lockhead, Ryan. Inverness Caledonian Thistle: Ridgers, Tremarco, Chammers, Warren, Pollarth, Duran, Ilbazedi 71, Vigors, Oakley, Mulraney, Bell 71, Harper, Mackay 4, Seedorf. Substitutes not used: Essen, Trafford, Mackay, Brown. The referee was Kevin Clancy. The attendance was 2,249. This article was by Darren Johnston.
The Herald, Monday, March the 12th, football. Rodgers in seventh heaven after Ibrox win. A report from Matthew Lindsay, the chief football writer. Brendan Rodgers last night admitted the epic 3-2 triumph over Rangers at Ibrox yesterday was as satisfying as any result he has overseen in his time as Celtic manager. Roger's side came from behind twice and survived going down to 10 men when Jozo Semyonovich was sent off to record an important victory. The win sends the Parkhead club, who have a game in hand against Dundee still to play, 9 points clear of their city rivals and increase their chances of winning a seventh title. Rogers, who was denied the services of Doris de Vries and had to hand Scott Bain a debut in goal, confessed it had been a sweet victory. Asked if it was as enjoyable a triumph as any he had been responsible for since moving to Glasgow 2 years ago, the Northern Irishman said, "Yes, definitely, because the odds are against you at times. It was like a game I'd watch when I was growing, watching Celtic versus Rangers. We made a mistake to go behind. In fact, we were behind twice. But we had great pride in the team. We played well and showed that toughness and character you need. In fairness to Rangers, they have been in really good form, and this was at the height of their confidence levels. For us to go on and win it with 10 men, was a splendid performance. But the league is not won, not by a long way. It was obviously a big step for us, though, to go 9 points clear with a game in hand. There is still a lot of work for us to do, and I think when you come to one of your rivals and are up against it with 10 men for 30 minutes of the game, then you are entitled to celebrate. It was a great victory for us, and I thought we deserved it." Murty, whose chances of being kept on as Rangers manager suffered a setback with the defeat, stressed that his team would not give up and predicted they would bounce back from the loss. He added, "Until the league is over, we will continue to fight as hard as we can. But my main aim is to improve where we are from where we were. I reiterate that we will improve from this. Sometimes these knockbacks actually make you stronger as a group and hungrier to go and succeed."
This article from the Herald on Monday the 12th of March 2018. Business. TV dragon Bannatyne sees profits rise at Gym Group. This article by Scott Wright. The gym chain owned by Scots entrepreneur Duncan Bannatyne has underlined its appetite for continuing expansion as it reported a near 60% rise in underlying profits, boosted by an increase in membership. Bannatyne Group, which has 71 outlets across the UK, reported a profit before exceptional items of £14.3 million, up 57% on 2016. It cited the impact of a 7.4% rise in membership to 211,715, as well as the benefit from increased spa income and a focus on operational efficiency. Turnover at the group, which has 11 facilities in Scotland, climbed to a record £117.6 million, up from £112.2 million in 2016. The growth came on the back of an investment programme in the last 2 years, which included expenditure of £14 million in its estate and £2.4 million on maintenance in 2017. The company acquired 4 further sites last year, spending £600,000 on a new gym in Aberdeen, and it invested £2.6 million to open a further 9 spas, which are usually located in the same building as its health clubs, taking to its total to 46. That helped revenue from spa operations climb by more than 13% to £16.5 million. Chief Executive Justin Musgrove said the results offer a clear demonstration that our strategy is delivering and that the investment over the past 2 years is driving strong return. He added, "The Bannatyne Group is seeking expand further through both organic growth as our current reinvested estate potential is realised and by careful acquisition. We are excited about prospects for 2018, which has started well with over 19,000 new members, another record signed up to date." Mr. Bannatyne, who shot to fame as one of the investors on BBC TV programme Dragon's Den, established the company in 1997 when it opened its first club on Teesside. The group now employs around 3,000 staff. This article by Scott Wright.
The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 14th of March 2018. Business HQ. John Menzies puts newspaper distribution division up for sale. This article by Mark Williamson. John Menzies has decided to sever its historic links with the newspaper trade in order to focus on the aviation support business. The Edinburgh-based group said it has put its newspaper and magazine distribution arm up for sale after deciding there are better growth prospects in markets such as cargo handling and plane refuelling. The decision to sell the distribution arm comes months after plans to merge the operation with DX Group fell apart. In November, Menzies appointed Rothschild Investment Bank to look at ways of separating the distribution and aviation divisions. Menzies, which became a household name after running a big chain of newsagents, has faced pressure from investors over the years to break itself up. Noting the distribution and aviation divisions operate in very different markets, Corporate Affairs Director John Geddes said, "If you were to start a business tomorrow, you wouldn't have them under the same roof." However, speaking after Menzies posted a record underlying profit of £78 million, Mr. Geddes said he thought the board had done a good job of resolving the challenges posed by the group owning such disparate businesses. It's only been in recent years that Menzies has found the divisions competing for capital. The group had been happy to use the cash generated by the distribution arm to fund its diversification into providing support for airlines. Earnings at the distribution arm have come under pressure amid falling sales of printed newspapers and magazines. The business has required investment to help it move into areas such as providing support for internet retailing. Mr. Geddes noted, "We've stepped through it, we've taken our time, and not done anything on a knee-jerk basis." He said the plan to merge the distribution arm with Slough-based DX Group had made perfect sense and been supported by shareholders, but could not be completed for various reasons. Menzies scrapped the merger plan in August after a profit warning issued by DX made the revised cash and shares deal the firms agreed in June less appealing. Mr. Geddes is confident Menzies will be able to get a good price for the distribution business. It's had expressions of interest from potential buyers. The division, which has around 2,000 vehicles, has moved into growth markets such as parcel distribution. Mr. Geddes said the aviation-focused business would remain based in Edinburgh following the sale. The group will use the sale proceeds to support the division's growth, potentially through acquisitions, and to pay down debt. A demerger of the distribution business remains a possibility, Mr. Geddes said. This would leave shareholders with an interest in the division. Directors think the share plan would create more value for shareholders. Mr. Geddes is confident the distribution business will remain based in Edinburgh following the sale, but any new owner will call the shots. Menzies grew underlying profits by 41% in 2017, from £55.2 million in 2016. The aviation business grew profits 72% to £58.8 million, helped by the $200 million acquisition of the ASIG refueling business in December 2016. The integration is going to plan. Distribution profits rose to £24.8 million from £24.7 million, which Menzies said represented a solid performance in the face of declining volumes and increasing wage costs. The group proposed a final dividend of 14.5 pence, taking the total to 20.5 pence, up 11%. The sale of the distribution arm would require shareholder approval. Founded in 1833, Menzies sold its newsagent's arm to W.H. Smith in 1998. This article by Mark Williamson.
This article from the Herald on Monday the 12th of March 2018. Business. Scottish economy slides on manufacturing woes as exports fall. Key Bank of Scotland PMI survey reveals. This article by Ian McConnell. Scotland's private sector economy slipped back into reverse last month and inflationary pressures intensified, a key survey shows. Bank of Scotland's latest Purchasing Managers Index report shows both the manufacturing and services sectors north of the border experienced contraction in February. It signals overall output of the Scottish private sector economy has fallen in two of the last 3 months. The output index for Scotland fell from 50.3 in January to 49.5 last month on a seasonally adjusted basis, dropping below the level of 50 deemed to separate expansion from contraction. It was 49.4 in December. Scotland's manufacturing sector saw a sharp downturn in its fortunes between January and February, with a fall in its output index from 52.2 to 48.8, signalling a move from modest but significant expansion to contraction. The survey also signals a sharp fall in new export orders for Scottish manufacturers in February, following a significant rise in January, in spite of the boost provided to the competitiveness of UK-based companies in overseas markets by Sterling's post-Brexit vote weakness. The fall in incoming export business for the sector last month was the sharpest since June 2017. Bank of Scotland noted survey respondents had reported lower demand from South Africa and the Middle East. Manufacturers north of the border also saw a fall in their total new orders last month, following a relatively healthy increase in January. The survey signals job creation in the Scottish manufacturing sector slowed in February to its weakest pace in 11 months. Meanwhile, against the backdrop of higher commodity prices and raw material shortages, Scottish manufacturers raised their factory gate prices last month at the fastest pace since April 2017. The pace of contraction of Scottish services sector output accelerated marginally but remained modest in February. The services business activity index fell from 49.8 in January to 49.7 last month on a seasonally adjusted basis. Scottish services sector employment fell marginally in February, having risen in January. This decline in services employment followed 8 consecutive months of job creation in the sector. The survey signals overall employment in the Scottish private sector economy was flat last month. It points to a marginal contraction in overall new business for Scottish companies. Scottish services companies as a whole recorded a marginal increase in new business last month. They raised prices in February at the fastest pace since May 2017, and they reported higher fuel, food, metal and labour costs. Bank of Scotland said increased raw material costs was a principal reason cited by firms who marked up prices charged. Annual UK Consumer Prices Index inflation has surged to 3% from 0.3% in May 2016, ahead of the Brexit vote. Sterling's post-Brexit vote weakness has increased the cost of imports. The sector's return to contractionary territory in London in February contrasts with a modest acceleration and expansion in the UK as a whole. The UK output index rose from 53.5 in January to 54.5 last month on a seasonally adjusted basis. However, while significantly ahead of the corresponding reading in Scotland, this signals relatively modest growth. Chris Williamson, Chief Business Economist at IHS Markit, calculated the Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supplies reports on February activity in the UK manufacturing, construction and services sectors together pointed to a quarterly growth rate of less than 0.4%. This is well below trend. This article by Ian McConnell.
Thank you for listening to this week's Digest edition of the Herald Scotland. This weekly Talking Newspaper Digest was a Q&Review recording service production. The readers were volunteers at Q&Review and the producer was Jay Kidd. Q&Review Recording Service Limited is a registered charity. Scottish Charity Number SCO 18016. Our registered office is at 18 Crowhill Road, Bishopbriggs, Glasgow, G64 1QY. Remember, you can contact us via email at information@qnreview.com or via leaving a message on our answering service at 0141 772 3976. Please remember to return the cassette in the wallet provided. Just flip over the address label and post it.